You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the earth. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, January 19th, 2018, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the program and welcome to the weekend. So glad we made it here. And a quick note for the show schedule, it's changing up. The next week, I will be on Monday and Friday because Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I am working at the Cannabis Collaborative Conference here in Portland, Oregon. So I won't be able to do any shows in the middle of the week, but you'll get a show on Monday and Wednesday, or Monday and Friday. And then the following week, wanted to let you know that we'll have shows on Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday is my 50th birthday, and I'll be driving to San Francisco, California to take place in the International Cannabis Business Conference in San Francisco on Thursday and Friday. So I guess the long and short of it is for the next 2 weeks, you're getting two shows a week. And apologize for that, but, well, it might be a harbinger. Anyway, let's get to today's show. Because on today's show, very interesting stuff going on. In the Radical Rant, I'm going to tell you all about one of my latest friends, Will Jones. He's from Project Samuel, and he was also the founder of Two Is Enough DC, which was the organization fighting Washington, D.C.'s marijuana legalization that passed by, what, 71%, was it? Anyway, I've been going back and forth with Will on Twitter over the past couple of days, and we've actually been having a very interesting conversation. I want to bring you some of it in today's Radical Rant, which I entitle A Look at the Modern Day Puritans, because, folks, that's what the anti-marijuana cabal really is, just Puritans. It's a streak that's been in Americans' DNA since the 1600s, and it still survives. Also coming up on the show, we got news to tell you about. This just came across my desk 10 minutes ago, literally, so I'm just still reading up on it. But about a new bill in the state of Colorado, coming out of the Colorado Senate, to add a chemical tracking agent to all state legal marijuana so they could distinguish it between black market weed, or if they catch it on the black market, they'll know that it was regulated weed. I'm going to tell you how incredibly stupid that is coming up after the news. Also in that segment, we're going to do some data mining on customer data from Ease, the cannabis delivery system. But first, the news.
This is your cannabis headline news. Brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Friday, January 19th, 2018. I'm Russ Belville. Medical marijuana patients and providers are at risk of being arrested, prosecuted, and sent to prison by Jeff Sessions' Justice Department after midnight tonight. The federal government will shut down at midnight on Friday, barring an unexpected last-minute bipartisan deal. Under a shutdown scenario, an existing budget provision that prevents the Drug Enforcement Administration and other agencies from spending money to interfere with state medical cannabis laws would expire. But federal drug enforcement and prosecution actions, which are exempted from furloughs, would continue. If the provision lapses, it wouldn't just allow new actions against people violating federal marijuana laws today. It would also allow earlier medical cannabis prosecutions that were suspended under the rider to resume. A top official with the U.S. Treasury Department says the Trump administration is currently reviewing whether to keep or rescind Obama-era banking guidance for banks to serve the marijuana industry without running afoul of federal regulators. Quote, "We are reviewing the guidance in light of the Attorney General's recent decision to revoke a Justice Department memorandum on this issue," end quote, said Segal Mandelker, the department's deputy secretary, at a Senate hearing on Wednesday. However, she added that the Treasury guidance, quote, "remains in place at least least for now, we're taking a look at it in light of the Justice Department's announcement, end quote. Earlier this month, U.S. Attorney General Sessions rescinded a 2013 memo that had generally allowed states to implement their own cannabis laws without federal interference. Documents released by FinCEN last month showed the number of banks willing to work with the marijuana industry has steadily grown over time. President Donald Trump is planning to slash the budget of the Office of National Drug Control Policy in what marks his administration's second attempt to gut the top office responsible for coordinating the federal response to the opioid crisis. The plan would shift the office's two main grant programs, the High-Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas Grant and the Drug-Free Communities Act, to the Justice and Health and Human Services Departments, respectively. Multiple sources in the administration and others working with the government on the opioid crisis told Politico. The move would result in a reduction of about $340 million, or 95% of the ONDCP's budget. Trump administration officials say the office would still serve as the White House's drug policy shop, while the grants would be administered by larger agencies. Trump also hasn't appointed a permanent director or drug czar to lead the ONDCP or ask Congress for any additional funding that he said that states say are needed to tackle the opioid crisis. Vermont Governor Phil Scott says he has decided to sign the marijuana legalization bill before Monday's deadline, but the signing ceremony will not take place in public. Scott said he, quote, isn't shying away from it, end quote, nor will he allow the bill to become law without his signature. He added that he recognizes the measure is controversial and he wants to be respectful of other views. The bill arrived on the governor's desk from the legislature earlier this week. It is now being reviewed for technical errors by the governor's legal counsel. Scott said he feels signing the bill into law in private is more appropriate. The measure will allow adults 21 and older to possess up to 1 ounce of marijuana and grow up to 2 mature plants at home starting July 1st. The bill does not allow for retail or private sales of marijuana, nor does it collect any tax revenue. The bill also creates a new crime of furnishing marijuana to a minor. With Scott's signature, Vermont will become the first U.S. state to legalize recreational use of marijuana through the legislative process. At least 63 of the 146 companies that didn't win Ohio medical marijuana cultivator licenses plan to appeal the state's decision through an administrative hearing process. The list of businesses seeking a hearing includes 47 companies that applied for a large-scale grow license and 16 companies that applied for a small-scale grow license. The number could grow because the Ohio Department of Commerce staggered mailing notices to rejected applicants, and applicants have 30 days to respond. One losing company has filed suit against the state for awarding 2 grow licenses to lower-scoring companies that were majority-owned or operated by a minority. PharmaCann Ohio LLC, which also filed an administrative appeal, argues Ohio's law requiring 15% of marijuana business licensees to be issued to minority applicants is unconstitutional. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Friday, January 19th, 2018. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Now that California has legalized recreational marijuana, you need to get the latest expertise on the rules and regulations governing this multi-billion dollar market. The International Cannabis Business Conference is the longest-running event of its kind in California. Join us at the Hyatt Regency San Francisco for the 4th annual ICBC and the first conference in California after legalization. You'll be treated to focused presentations from California's top industry experts, featuring the head of California's Cannabis Commission, Lori Ajax. At the VIP reception, you'll have the chance to meet marijuana legend and new cannabis entrepreneur, Tommy Chong. After the conference, you'll be treated to a VIP after party featuring DJ Muggs from Cypress Hill. It's the International Cannabis Business Conference in San Francisco, February 1st and 2nd at the Hyatt Regency. Visit internationalcbc.com for details. Make sure you log on to internationalcbc.com for your tickets to California's first marijuana business conference under legalization.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
And let me be clear about marijuana. It is a potentially dangerous gateway drug that frequently leads to the use of harder drugs.
Whatever you're smoking, it's not marijuana.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal potland Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com. City of Portland permit number 17-159855.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
We got a lot to get to in the Drug War Data Mines with data provided by Ease, the cannabis delivery service out of California. But before we do that, I real quickly have to address a piece that came across my desk just 10 minutes before airtime, coming from the website 420intel.com. And in this piece, it's titled, "New Colorado Bill Would Add Chemical Agent to Cannabis Plants to Help Police Track Illegal Marijuana." The bill is SB 29. Stipulates that, quote, the technology must include an agent that is applied to a marijuana plant, marijuana product, industrial hemp, or industrial hemp product, and then scanned by a device. Now, we're still kind of vague on this because we don't know what kind of marker that would be. The technology doesn't exist yet. But the idea here is that something's going to be added to weed so we can tell it's legal weed. And I can tell you right now, cannabis consumers aren't going to go for that. They're not going to like that at all, except that in any way. But the unintended consequence of this that the regulators here, the lawmakers, aren't thinking of is that if you make weed legal, but then make an agent to put on it that proves it's legal, all you're going to do is make that agent the next prohibited item that becomes expensive and traded across the black market. Right? Somebody's going to corrupt one of these government folks to get a sample of this agent, whatever it is. And the same guys that put their time and expertise into figuring out how to reproduce the sun and the earth and the water indoors to grow the highest potency cannabis plants on the planet are going to take that expertise and apply it to this new chemical agent or whatever the hell it is, reverse engineer it, figure out what it is, make a whole bunch of it, sell it to everyone on the black market, and now your testing is worthless. It's the same stupid escalating arms race we have with drug testing. They come up with a drug test, we find a way to beat it. They find a way to cover how we beat it, we find a way to beat that. Just accept that people can grow cannabis. They're going to share it with one another. Some of them are going to sell it illegally. All these problems they're trying to solve are a problem of the fact that we still have too much prohibition. This isn't a problem of legalization. This is a problem that Kansas still has prohibition. Illinois still has prohibition. Texas still has prohibition. South Carolina, every place else that has prohibition wants what Colorado has. The only solution to this is to treat marijuana like alcohol, have it legal in all 50 states, have it accepted, commercialized, and regulated. We don't have to have any sort of marking agent to be able to tell whether the can of Budweiser is actually Budweiser or it's not some guy who home brewed it and put it in a Budweiser can, do we? No! We don't have any problem with home brewers clouding up the craft brew market or getting into the macro brew market or messing anything up because there's no need for it. There's no need for a home brew black market. Anyway, let's get to the drug war data mining, because this is some fascinating stuff coming from the cannabis delivery portal Ease. That's EAZE. And I think Snoop Dogg have a bit in that somehow. Anyway, this is their 2017 State of Cannabis Data Report. It's trends from 350,000 cannabis consumers that have used their services and over 15,000 surveys they've given that have gotten responses. One of the quick data points is they point out the day that California legalized marijuana, November of 2016, on the very next day, marijuana demand increased 18%. They point out that every 10 seconds, somebody is ordering marijuana on the Ease platform. And that increased from an order every 30 seconds back in 2016. They find the markets that grew the most were the San Francisco Bay, the Peninsula, and the East Bay. San Jose has jumped, but it's a new market in the Ease platform. And speaking of that, let's recognize that while 350,000 customer user database is a great database to have, We can't quite say it's scientific because they're not in every city in California. There's not a random sampling of older folks versus younger folks, right? So make of it what you will, but we can't specifically say this is scientific information. But they do point out some interesting trends. The top holidays for marijuana use based on, you know, deliveries. Well, of course, the number one holiday, 420. Absolutely, 420. But what would you think the number two day for marijuana was? Well, it's something they've got up here called Green Wednesday. I haven't heard this term, Green Wednesday. I had to look it up. It's the day before Thanksgiving. Or I guess because out here on the West Coast, we've called it Danksgiving, right? Every Danksgiving is in the non-marijuana world, they call it Friendsgiving or whatever the name is. It's the dinner you have with your friends, with your social group, aside from your family group that you have on Thursday. And some people do it. You got your Black Friday, the shopping day and all that. So Green Wednesday, Danksgiving, same thing. Number three in their list in increased top holidays for 2017, the President's Day weekend. Interesting. President's Day, you know, when you go out and buy mattresses and stuff. Well, I guess maybe it's a salute to George Washington, who actually grew this stuff. And then following, you got Valentine's Day, Halloween, July 4th, which are nowhere near the increases of 420, Green Wednesday, and President's Day. We also find that cannabis brands increased from 18 to 61 in the span of the past year. Products increased 101 to 427. And they show an increasing growth in the vaporizer market. Month after month from 2016, vaporizing has come to include about 25% of their market. Pre-rolls also increasing from the start of 2017, increasing share of the market. The share of the market for edibles has grown slightly, but has stayed somewhat consistent throughout 2017. And then they show, starting in June, some increase for topicals and drops. It must be new products then. And, of course, flower, going from having been around 75, 78% of the market, now flower is at or below 50% of the market for cannabis products. Top strains, according to the Ease survey, LAOG, a new strain, followed by Blackjack, Blue Dream, Jack Herer, and Ghost OG. CBD options quadrupled from 8 to 45 CBD options on the Ease platform. They find that the products that have the highest ratio of female or male buyers, women are overwhelmingly buying lavender bath soak, lavender all-in-one CBD, and Rose OG Headwaters flower, whereas men overwhelmingly bought Pax Era, Jack Herer, and Bloom Farms, Silver Label Banana Dream Concentrate, and Candy Jack Cake Batter Concentrate. So it seems like the women were more on the topicals and flowers, and the men were more on the concentrates. Also, they note the share of female consumers is growing. Women made one out of four female consumers on Ease in 2015. Women were one out of four consumers, I should say. Now, the last year, 2016, they were one out of three, a third of the consumers. Now they're all the way up to 35% of consumers on Ease. Marijuana orders by baby boomers increased by 19%, the highest growth. And the millennials actually went down by minus 1%. And I think this is interesting how the icons they're using on the website, Generation X's icon is a cassette Walkman. Makes sense, right? Baby boomers icon is a peace symbol on a necklace. That makes sense, right? The millennials icon is an avocado for their like avocado toast, I guess. And Generation Z, the youngsters, they've got like a ghost icon or a ghost emoji, I guess. Flower is most ordered by Generation Z. The youngsters are most ordering flower. Pre-rolls, also Generation Z. Concentrates, Generation Z. And millennials are leading in vaporizers. As far as drops and tinctures, it's Generation X. Edibles, Generation X. Topicals, baby boomers. And that lines up about the way you'd expect it to, with older folks wanting to get the relief from their aches and pains, more likely to be using a topical. Monthly spending is up among all generations. And they point out how many people are consuming marijuana to reduce sleeping pill consumption. 57% use sleeping pills, 95% use cannabis to try to reduce their sleeping pills. And of those, 45% replace their sleeping pills entirely with the use of cannabis. Just one more way you can see why the mainstream doesn't want to see cannabis legalized. Sleeping pill manufacturers don't want a free competitor.
And blue blasting gurgan, fuffin' blur blasting snurb norbin.
All right, that sound means it's 20 after the hour, 4:20 in Denver, Colorado. Time for us to take our union mandated safety briefing. And for today's safety briefing, I brought Mr. Snowman from the Daily High Club. Thanks, Daily High Club. And we got some of this to go with it. Yummy. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
We've turned the corner on drug addiction in the United States. Drug addiction in the United States is under control.
Okay, maybe you're a little high. The Marijuana Agenda is a listener-supported independent podcast brought to you by Radical Russ Media, LLC. Subscribe to our VIP feed at MJAgenda.com for access to our ad-free podcast segment archive. Make a one-time donation to support the Marijuana Agenda at paypal.me/radicalruss. Now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
I just wanted to be like the other guys. Everybody was doing it. And no one was getting hurt. And I'm not gonna lie, it felt real good. Once in a while, it became every day, and then twice a day. I'm never stopping now.
Friends? Yeah, well, they weren't very good friends, were they? Like I said, I just wanted to fit in.
This has been an actual anti-drug public service announcement. To combat this and other drug war hysteria, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific at live.mjagenda.com or download the free podcast at mjagenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. The Marijuana Agenda free podcast is available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, SoundCloud, and on our Facebook page at MJ Agenda. Free video archives are available at the Radical Russ channel on YouTube. Help keep this media free by making a donation at paypal.me/radicalruss.
total war against public enemy number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave a state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
For the years that I've been engaged in the act of legalizing marijuana, one of the things that's always frustrated me about our opponents, the people who wish to maintain criminal prohibition of the cannabis plant, is their seeming reluctance to want to do anything about alcohol. Right? I've often made the joke that we shouldn't have said treat marijuana like alcohol. We should say treat alcohol like marijuana. Like, you can only buy a six-pack of it at a time, and you can't have any kids see you doing it, and you can't do it in public, and you can't brew your own, right? But treat alcohol like marijuana. And so this comes up because I recently got into a Twitter debate with Will V. Jones, at Will V. Jones, and he's the founder of Two Is Enough DC. That was the group in Washington, D.C. that was fighting their marijuana legalization initiative in 2014 and lost with a 71% majority support for it. Will is fighting this now as a communications and outreach associate for Project Samuel. You know, the smart approaches to marijuana use except legalization. Kevin Sabet's group, right? So Will and I have been going back and forth because apparently he hasn't blocked me, unlike Kevin Sabet and his Project Sam main feed. But we've been going back and forth because I keep seeing them claim in various posts that they're trying to thwart the commercialized marijuana legalization, the big tobacco 2.0, because of their concerns for the public safety. And of course, what about the children? We got to think of the health of the children. And I simply stated that, look, I would believe your rationale if only you backed it up with two concrete actions. One, fight for alcohol to be subject to the same policies they demand for marijuana. And two, propose and or support the non-commercialized decriminalization of marijuana that they keep claiming they would support. Just do those two things, and I would believe you're really in this for the health of the children and for public safety. So, the response I got back from Will Jones was so revealing, I had to dedicate this entire rant to it. It's so much packed into such a 280-character limit. Let me read it. It's, quote, "The point is to not let marijuana policy replicate what the alcohol and tobacco industries have done. It is too late to roll back their respective statuses in our culture. We tried that once, and that was prohibition. If marijuana were already there, you might have a point." End quote. Four perfectly encapsulated points Will makes that shows just how much this war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs is just a culture war specifically designed to keep a certain type of people corralled and to keep cheap natural competitors out of the drug marketplace. So let's break it down sentence by sentence. Number one, the point is to not let marijuana policy replicate what the alcohol and tobacco industries have done. Stop marijuana from becoming like alcohol and tobacco. Okay, well, what exactly is our alcohol policy? Well, in the case of alcohol, it is to allow the promotional marketing of alcohol in nearly every arena, every media. It is to celebrate the youth initiation into alcohol culture in movies and television, the senior kegger, the beer with dad. It is to have an entirely different vocabulary when discussing alcohol, so it isn't even considered a drug in popular conversation. You didn't overdose, you're just hungover. You're not a user, you're a drinker. It is to have alcohol available in all but a few counties in the United States for sale at nearly every store, for purchase and on-site consumption at nearly every entertainment venue. It is to be so cavalier about the certainty, the absolute certainty of 88,000 alcohol-related deaths every year, that we not only promote and celebrate alcohol use everywhere for any occasion, we even accept that adults will drive their cars to the parking lots of buildings specifically intended for experiencing the effects of alcohol, and then we'll just trust them to use their own judgment as to whether or not they're too impaired to drive home. The most potent, most addictive, most deadly drug in our society. We trust you. Don't drink and drive. You know, drink responsibly. Now, believe it or not, I actually agree with Will somewhat on this point. Marijuana use, or for that matter, any adult activity, should be subject to reasonable restrictions to guard children and protect public safety. But to decide that we're just going to ignore the 800-pound gorilla of youth corruption and public danger that is alcohol, and then focus solely on preventing a far safer substance that some people might substitute for alcohol, and focus on experiencing the same leeway is nothing but willful disdain for children and safety, all in the service of a culture war. Well, Will goes on then to explain why we have to ignore the 800-pound gorilla. He's just been there too long. His second sentence, quote, "It is too late to roll back their respective statuses in our culture," end quote. Oh, really? Really? Well, see, when I was growing up, there was this thing called the Marlboro Man. There was also a stock car championship called the Winston Cup. In restaurants, I could play around with the handles of cigarette vending machines as my parents sat us in the smoking section. In stores, I could buy candy cigarettes and bubblegum cigars, complete with powdered sugar on them that you could blow like smoke. And anyone 18 or older could buy the actual cigarettes in any state. Looking back further, when my dad was growing up, soldiers in the military were issued cigarettes in their rations. Doctors explained how Chesterfields or Camels were healthy to smoke. Anchormen smoked cigarettes on their desks during the evening news on television. Smoking was allowed in airplanes, post offices, courthouses, almost everywhere. From that generation through my generation, a solid majority of the public smoked cigarettes. Somehow, it wasn't too late in the 1990s to roll back the cultural status of smoking cigarettes, even though smoking had been such an ingrained part of our culture, going all the way back to the 1500s. How'd we do it? Well, we did it by pointing out the severe public health concerns, both personally and societally, from smoking cigarettes. Then, we dragged the tobacco companies into court and forced them to settle on new policies that restricted their advertising, tightened up the security of their sales, mandated their funding of anti-tobacco public education, and states then began to further restrict tobacco by means such as raising the purchase age to 21. So you can't tell me that we can't roll back alcohol because it's too culturally ingrained. We've proven with tobacco we can roll back a deadly drug if we really put our minds to it. He gets to his third sentence, referring back to trying to kick the 800-pound gorilla out of the room. He says, quote, "We tried that once, and that was prohibition," end quote. Yes. And the result of that prohibition was that nobody who wanted to drink stopped drinking. Didn't affect anybody. But criminals then stepped in to take advantage of the demand that was no longer legally supplied. Entrepreneurs like Charles Rudolph Walgreen, aided by less scrupulous doctors, skirted the prohibition by filling medical alcohol prescriptions. Other businessmen sold bricks of compressed dehydrated grapes, warning buyers not to add water and sugar to it, and don't leave it in a warm, dark place for a few weeks, or else it'll ferment into illegal alcohol. Wink. Streets were filled with violence and law enforcement was corrupted. Drinkers suffered when untested homemade liquors blinded or killed them, or when government poisoned alcohol killed them. And eventually the public realized that despite some negatives that come with adult alcohol use, trying to extinguish that use led to worse public health and safety consequences than the alcohol caused in the first place. Sound familiar? Will writes as if the same prohibition hasn't been in effect for 80 plus years and has been shown to have the same sort of negative consequences. We seem to agree that alcohol prohibition was a dismal failure, yet he proposes the same policy for marijuana. Now, this is where they will quibble. Will and Kevin Sabet and Ben Court and these guys will all quibble by saying, no, 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 no. We don't support the old prohibition. We don't want old prohibition. We want to make it so users just get a slap on the wrist and they don't get a criminal record and they're not arrested and they're not jailed and maybe they get some interventions with some treatment, but nobody gets a criminal record. The users will be just fine. They'll never say that for the growers or the sellers, though. In fact, their website says that growing, production, and sales of marijuana should remain criminal acts, misdemeanors, and or felonies. And when you look at history, what you learn is that that proposal by Project Sam, no criminality for the users, maintain criminality for the producers and the sellers, is exactly what alcohol prohibition was. See, alcohol prohibition isn't like today's marijuana prohibition. It wasn't illegal from 1920 to 1933 to possess and use alcohol. If you had a stocked wine cellar in 1919, you could freely possess every bottle and drink up every weekend all the way through 1933. It was only illegal to manufacture, transport, and sell alcohol. That's why your black and white film strips that shows those G-men cracking open cases of beer at the speakeasy, but you never see the black and whites of them breaking down doors of people's houses, shooting their family pets, and cuffing their kids in their own homes because they had a massive cache of wine. In a sense, alcohol prohibition was alcohol decrim. Criminally bust the producers and dealers. But at worst, you get slaps on the wrist for the users. And that's the same policy Will's Project Samuel claims to support. That's why I asked him the treat alcohol like marijuana question in the first place. Because if the policies they propose for marijuana are what will keep the public safe, why are they not proposing them for alcohol? And we wouldn't even have to go back to the prohibition they say they oppose. I say, look, just take the policy they propose for marijuana users and implement that. Just for the user, what we say that marijuana users should be subject to, let's do that for alcohol users. Let's require that anyone that police encounter in public who is visibly intoxicated gets a ticket, has their booze taken away from them, and then they have to go before a medical panel to determine if they're an alcoholic. And if they are an alcoholic, they're required to maintain sobriety, we'll give them random piss tests to verify it, and they go to jail if they don't comply. Think that'll fly? That's not even saying go back to prohibition. No criminal charges for the alcoholic. We're just going to take his booze, test to see if he's an alcoholic, require you piss test, the same stuff you proposed for me as a pot smoker. Think that'll fly? Because in the marijuana industry, in legalization, we aren't replicating what alcohol has done by any stretch of the imagination. Look, I can buy all the alcohol I like. Some places sell alcohol 24/7, and others I can get alcohol to the late evening or even 1 or 2 in the morning. I can consume alcohol in public places. Advertising for alcohol is nearly unrestricted. Alcohol retailers can offer samples and have transparent glass windows. If anything, marijuana legalization has learned from the excesses of alcohol and tobacco and has proceeded exceedingly carefully. And his final sentence, quote, if marijuana were already there, you might have a point, end quote. Meaning, if marijuana were already an 800-pound gorilla, if marijuana already had a massive cultural attachment, if marijuana were already enormously popular, then we might have a point. It's the most crystalline distillation of why they go after marijuana and not alcohol. We're not there yet, in terms of being ingrained enough in the culture, just means that we're the weakling the bully thinks he can beat. We both admit that alcohol was too ingrained to stop. We both say prohibition was a failure because, well, part of it's because it was a part of our culture for over 10,000 years since the dawn of humanity. We've had alcohol. Then I showed you guys how 400 years of tobacco smoking in our culture wasn't too ingrained to seriously ratchet back. So where do we got to get to? 500 years? 1,000 years? 5,000? When is it culturally accepted enough not to treat us differently? I mean, to folks like Will, they see marijuana culture as only dating back to the 1960s. So yeah, just 50 years of culture, that should be easy to oppose. Of course, that's just 50 years of white popular culture. that's enjoyed marijuana smoking. African Americans were enjoying their marijuana, listening to known pot smokers like Louis Armstrong and Cab Calloway singing about their jive and the reefer man, going all the way back to the 1900s. 50 years before that, Mexican Americans were enjoying their mota while fighting the U.S. government over their land, and white Americans were getting their cannabis in patent medicines. So newsflash, Will, marijuana's already there. Five straight polls have shown legalization support in the 60% range, 60 to 64. Even your own multiple choice poll just released found that only 16% support continuing to punish everyone who smokes pot. Marijuana's already all over TV and movies and music. Hell, I just realized the other day that gin and juice is like 24 years old. Wow. 8 states have already legalized marijuana. There's another 6 that are on the way for 2018. We're going to have another one by this Monday. This weekend, we will have our 9th legal marijuana state in Vermont. All but 4 states in the United States recognize some sort of medical value to marijuana. And 2 more states are set to join the 29 that currently allow for psychoactive medical marijuana in this next election. And we're not talking about some hippie liberal blue states, but Oklahoma, freaking Oklahoma and Utah. So Will, I got to say, folks, Will has been really forthcoming in our discussions. And in the last tweet I got before going on the air, asked me when he could come on the show. So we're working it out, trying to get our schedule together. And perhaps on Monday, our guest will be prohibitionist Puritan Will Jones from Project Samuel. I'll keep you posted.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, I'm Radical Russ Belleville. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.